Yep.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is June the 22nd, 2015. We are gathered for the purpose of a work session on House Bill 2075A relating to aircraft fuel, and a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2274A relating to transportation funding. Excuse me.
Madam Co-Chair, if I might say apologies to anybody that may have been planning to be here for something else. This agenda's been through more changes than my wife before a dinner party.
Well, that is a perfect segue. Colleagues, without opening any kind of a hearing, I'm going to invite Irene Gilbert to come forward. Mrs. Gilbert has driven twice to the Oregon legislature and has been unable to testify, and it isn't like she's driving across Salem. She has driven from La Grande. This is one of the perils of being on 1 hour notice, and so as a courtesy to Mrs. Gilbert and out of respect for the distance she's traveled, I'm going to invite Mrs. Gilbert up to present the testimony that she would have presented had House Bill 3402 not been pulled from the agenda. Mrs. Gilbert, please.
Thank you, Senator Johnson, I think. Anyway, thank you, committee, for being willing to listen to me. I'm Irene Gilbert. I live in La Grande, Oregon, and I'm here in support of the bill number is House Bill 3402, but I know this isn't for real, so I'm not quite sure how to proceed.
Mrs. Gilbert, it's for real. It's just not on the record.
Okay.
You've got a committee listening to your concerns, and I have reason to believe we'll see this bill again.
Okay. Anyway, I'm here in support of raising the speed limit for Eastern Oregon, partly because the bill really reflects what the real speed limit is perceived to be over there right now. And pretty much anyone that you ask what the legitimate speed limit is or that lives in Eastern Oregon will tell you, you can drive between 75 and 78 miles per hour. Don't drive 79 miles per hour. So that's kind of the standard over there. And I believe that when the laws don't reflect the behavior of the people, and the people as a broad group basically say the kind of thing that I've just said, what it does is it promotes a disrespect for the law, generally speaking, because you've made criminals of everybody that drives 75 miles an hour, which is pretty much everybody. And I also think that it takes police away from more significant issues when they have this conflict between, do I enforce the letter of the law or do I let all these people drive by at 75 miles an hour and ignore it? And as someone who used to work for OSHA for a long time, I used to be a safety trainer, I think it is a safety issue for the police force, because if you do have a policeman that enforces a rule that virtually everyone else ignores, and normally the people that do this are people that are new at the job, I believe it puts them at risk of workplace violence, because they are perceived as total jerks, and there are a lot of other words that people would use, but the bottom line is I think they put themselves in the potential physical harm because of the hostility, because everybody knows that nobody gets cited for it except, you know, maybe one individual. So there's enough true criminal activity going on that to suggest that our police force should be spending time giving traffic citations to people going 75 miles an hour when that is the accepted standard, I think is a waste of valuable resources. So,
thank you very much, Mrs. Gilbert. And again, on behalf of the legislature, apologies are extended. We are in this 1 hour notice time, and what has happened to you is exhibit A in why the 1 hour notice doesn't work. Thank you for being willing to give your testimony. Senator Hansel.
Well, Madam Co-Chair, I just want to thank you on behalf of Ms. Gilbert, one of my valued constituents. And for you to allow her to have this time is very special, and I want to personally thank you for doing that, because it is a long drive to I just made it last night from Pendleton and got in at 2:30 this morning. So.
And you drove 60 the entire way.
Representative Whitson.
Thank you. Also, thank you for coming. And I personally have been the recipient of a ticket for going 62 miles an hour from a brand new policewoman who was out on her first patrol. And it was a sky blue clear day and a straight stretch of road, and I came up over a hill going 62 and I got a ticket, and she said, "You are not following the law." And I said, "Okay, you know." So there is a lot of merit to what you're saying. In fact, you know, that's, most of us would not think of getting a ticket going 62 out in eastern Oregon. So
yeah. Co-Chair Gumber.
Thank you again, Ms. Gilbert. My question, and I don't know if you know the answer, is that if, for example, Representative Whitsitt gets a ticket in your neighborhood driving 62, what happens when that goes to court, since the norm is so much higher?
Well, I can't really, I don't really know what happens when it goes to court. I know a lot of times police don't show up on things like this because they have more important things to do, and so the judge just kind of does whatever the judges choose to do. You know, when they have to choose between responding to a robbery and showing up for a 62-mile-an-hour ticket, they're probably going to make the right choice.
If it's somebody outside of District 29, they'll have to pay.
Thank you. On that note, Mrs. Gilbert, thank you for coming. Have a safe drive back to LeGrand. And again, on behalf of the legislature, apologies for a long drive. And thank you for giving your testimony.
Thank you. You are my hero at the moment.
Senator
Monroe.
Just a comment. I have always believed that the speed limit ought to be targeted to the level of safety. For example, not all of eastern Oregon is the same level of safety. When you go up over Cabbage Patch Hill, probably the 65-mile-an-hour speed limit is plenty. But from Pendleton to Arlington, it probably ought to be 80. It ought to reflect the level of safety where you're going. If it's a long, straight, wide highway, then it ought to be higher. If it's curvy, dangerous highway, or like the road coming down into LeGrand, down the Ron River, or whatever that river is. Grand Ron River. Yeah, that 65 is probably enough down that hill. Mm-hmm. But in other places, 75 or so is more appropriate.
I think if you don't mind me responding, I mean, there is a law that says that people have to drive according to the situation. And actually, on Cabbage Hill, there are times when 30 miles an hour is the reasonable speed. And so I'm not sure that having a speed limit that's 75, you still have that reasonable person rule that any highway may be 40 miles an hour if there's smoke coming across the road or different things.
Thank you, Mrs. Gilbert. That may be one of the issues that is holding this bill up. And as the co-chair of this committee, I would invite you to work with Senator Hansel's office. If this bill comes back up again, we could accommodate you by telephone. You will have been here in person. We will make that part of the record when the bill appears again. But contact Senator Hansel, and we'll make sure that your testimony does become part of the permanent record.
Thank you.
Thank you. Safe trip home. All right, colleagues, we have our legislative cohort, Mr. Davis, Representative Davis, here. Would it be all right if we took these out of order as a courtesy to him?
No. I mean, yes.
All right, so with that, I am going to open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2274A relating to transportation funding. And Representative Davis is here today because our other colleague, Representative McEwen, has a conflict she cannot overcome and asked Representative Davis to appear in her stead. So, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Senator Johnson, Representative Gomberg, members of the committee. It's good to be here to discuss Connect Oregon with you and the A-engrossed version of House Bill 2274. Representative McEwen, the chair of the Transportation Committee in the House, and Senator Beyer, chair of the Transportation Committee in the Senate, convened a work group to discuss the policy issues surrounding Connect Oregon. I remind you that this bill in front of us is the policy bill related to Connect. It is not the funding bill related to Connect Oregon. But you may or may not know that Connect Connect has been a very successful program in Oregon's history. As one who's had the opportunity to introduce myself as State Representative John Davis from House District 26, as one who's had the opportunity to travel to transportation committees and meetings around the country, I can tell you that Connect Oregon is discussed around the country as a model of investment for states in non-highway infrastructure. As you know, Connect Oregon is the multimodal investment in non-highway infrastructure that the state of Oregon makes in things like rail, marine, aviation, bicycle, and pedestrian infrastructure in our state. And through the years, it's come to the attention of members of the legislature and those involved in Connect Oregon that it could use some tightening up in terms of the money that has been dedicated to it. Connect started as a $100 million program for the first few years. I think last session it was funded at the $43 million rate using lottery bonds. And there's a proposal, I think, for it to be between 50 or above 50 million in the co-chair's budget this session. A work group was convened by Representative McEwen and Senator Beyer, consisting of myself, the chairs of transportation committees, Senator Johnson, Representative Gomberg, Senator Hansel, and I think that covers pretty much everybody that was in the group, including officials from the Oregon Department of Transportation. The changes reflected to policy in Connect Oregon in the engrossed House bill are the following. The concept of loans were eliminated from Connect Oregon altogether. Loans have only been used, I believe, once or twice in Connect Oregon's long history. And really, loans right now for infrastructure are available both from public and private sources to those entities involved in Connect. And the discussion that we heard both from the department and from those who have invested in Connect is that loans was just not part of Connect that has been utilized at all. So the engrossed 2274 eliminates loans from Connects, adds marine to the definition of transportation projects, and narrows the scope of a transportation project, specifically excluding costs associated with operating expenses or the purchase of vehicles. And I believe you have a dash A6 amendment in the record that further changes that definition. There was some discussion about excluding vehicles altogether would exclude buses and potentially some types of rail vehicles that we would continue to want to be funded through Connect. So the definition under A6 that was brought forward would only exclude operating expenses or the purchase of bicycles. The matching requirement was raised from 20% from the grant agency to 30 from the recipient agency, excuse me. This really came out of the reality that the department told us that every recipient of Connect funds has received more or has brought forward more than 30% of matching money in the past. And so raising this both reflects reality in what's happening with Connect Oregon projects and also ensures that those entities bringing a potential Connect project have sufficient, quote, skin in the game. There is also a change that reflects changes in conflict of interest. If you look on page 3 of the bill, the director may not choose a member of the final review committee for Connect who represents an entity that submitted an application for Connect Oregon funding and has a direct or has a direct financial interest in an application. Again, this is just to make sure that the selection process is completely above board and there are not conflicts of interest in the final selection committee. Finally, there is a change you see on the top of page 3 in the criteria for projects that qualify for Connect to ensure that the review committees consider whether a proposed transportation project has a useful life expectancy that offers maximum benefit to the state. And the issue here is we're using lottery bonds, which are 20-year bonds, and we do not want to be investing our money that we will be paying interest on for 20 years in projects that have a very short life expectancy. We want to make sure we're getting maximum return on investment. Finally, the emergency clause is very intentional in order to put these changes in effect immediately for the upcoming round of Connect, which will, in all likelihood, be in our lottery bonding bill. With that, that should pretty well summarize the changes made in the House, and I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Colleagues, any questions of Representative Davis? Representative Nierman.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Representative Davis, I noticed that Connect Oregon has funding for bike and pedestrian in there. And to me, that seems a little bit kind of off mission when you're talking about kind of economic development, infrastructure kind of things. You think of things like airports and rail and bridges and those kinds of things. And I think that, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think the highway fund requires that 1% of the highway fund go to bicycle projects. I wonder if we're not doing having too much of a belts and suspenders, too much support for bike and pedestrian projects. Maybe you can address that.
Through the co-chairs, thank you, Representative Nierman. There was discussion about the role of bikes and pedestrian Connect Oregon. The subcommittee decided to leave it in. The bikes and pedestrian projects had been added in the 2013 session. I would point to the review committees must consider a number of factors in funding a Connect Oregon project, and you'll see those factors listed beginning on page 2, whether a proposed transportation project reduced transportation costs, whether they have an economic benefit to the state, whether or not they represent a critical link between elements of Oregon's transportation system, how much of the cost of the project can be borne by the applicant, whether the proposed project is ready for construction, and whether a proposed project has a useful life expectancy that offers maximum benefit to the state. So in light of the fact that the review committees will be considering multiple factors and all projects for which an application is submitted are going to have to pass muster under those criteria, we decided that leaving all types of projects in there for the offering was the wise course at this time.
And you think that it's likely that the bike projects would be excluded based on that criteria, that they'd have a tougher time meeting that then?
Through the co-chairs, Representative Nierman, I don't want to say that they would be excluded because they're not excluded, but I think that like any project, they're going to have to stand up to these criteria.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, colleagues, Senator Monroe.
Yeah, in the Portland metro area, there are more than 20,000 people every day that commute to work by bicycle. So facilities that make their commute safer are important.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Representative Davis. On the sign-up sheet, we have Mark Landauer from Oregon Public Ports Association, Martin Callery from the Port of Coos Bay, Jody Weiser, Tax Fairness Oregon. If anyone else, and you don't have to come up at once unless you're inclined to do so, but I wanted to offer the opportunity for testimony. If anyone is moved by the spirit of public testimony, I would ask the professional staff to put a, is there another sign-up sheet out there?
Put one.
Anybody else, just show a hand. Anybody else is okay. Thank you. With that, Mr. Landauer.
Good afternoon, Chair Johnson, Gomberg, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of Oregon's 23 public ports in the state of Oregon. Together, our ports employ either directly, indirectly, or induce over 100,000 jobs in the state of Oregon, generating nearly $600 million annually in state and local income taxes and property taxes. The Oregon Public Ports Association has been a very big benefactor of the previous five Connect programs. As you know, transportation-related assets are very diverse, marine, rail, aviation, and as a result, this is the singular program that can assist the ports in the state of Oregon with moving commodities in an expeditious and efficient manner. Ports are in a global marketplace, and our competitiveness is based largely in part on how quickly we can move those commodities. As a result, the Oregon Public Ports Association is extremely supportive of House Bill 2274 and the modifications being made to the program, and we would simply ask that you move this bill also efficiently and quickly, and hopefully provide the adequate resources through the bonding bill in the days and perhaps hopefully not weeks to come. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very kindly. Colleagues, questions?
For Mr. Landauer?
Yes, please.
I like the Oregonian a lot better when your dad was running it.
Thank you, Senator Monroe. Anything else for Mr. Landauer? Mr. Callery, welcome. You two have driven a long ways today.
Chair Johnson, Chair Gomberg, member of the committee, I'm Martin Callery. I serve as Chief Commercial Officer for the Port of Coos Bay. I have written testimony that I will provide I'm not going to go into all of my other transportation affiliations, but I want to echo what Mark has said and also say that I'm representing both the Oregon Public Ports Association and the Oregon Rail Users League. In my written testimony, I have a long list of projects that have benefited from the Connect Oregon program, focused primarily on rail and marine. And for us at the Port of Coos Bay, it's been a critical program that has helped us move forward on a lot of fronts. But I want to talk more about the other ports and the other railroads. The railroad like Lake Railway down in southeastern Oregon and the Portland and Western, which has a great service that they provide in the Central Corridor. And, you know, some of the smaller ports have projects that have allowed them to be more competitive and to move commodity much, much better than they have been. I've looked at the proposed changes. I think those proposed changes are good. I understand that in the past, many projects have pledged more than the 20% requirement. But I think there's an upside to requiring 30%, and I think it's because it makes you reach out to other partners to make these things happen. I mean, that's what we've had to do, and I think that's what many railroads and many of the ports have had to do. So it fine-tunes the program. I don't have any problem with the loan program. I think that was something that really wasn't utilized. It's better just to do away with it. And I think many of the other changes are just fine-tuning of what is considered to be a leading program nationwide on providing freight mobility and other aspects of transportation mobility statewide. So we've got a good reputation with this program. I want to see it move forward. I'm going to be stingy and say I want you to fund it at $100 million. I know that's not going to happen, but I hope that at some point in the future it can return to that $100 million because the backlog of projects that help move our economy is growing faster than we can do anything about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions for Mr. Callery? Mr. Callery, I have had the opportunity to be on the ground at your port and actually walk across one of your rail trestles, and I can easily nominate a potential candidate for Connect support. You've got some rail trestles down there that could use some help.
Yes, we do.
Thank you very much for coming today. I would invite up Jody Weiser, please, and on deck Jonathan Manton. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Dawson, members of the committee. I'm Jody Weiser. I'm representing Taxpayers Oregon. We've been examining Connect Oregon through a couple of cycles now, and we're actually we have a different viewpoint than what you've heard. We think that many of the things we've seen done are totally what the state should be doing, but there are other projects that go forward that we question the use of public funds for those projects. And there are projects where a grant doesn't make sense to us and a loan would make sense. So to see that the loan element taken out of the law is disturbing. The way the program operates, the applicant decides, am I going to ask for a loan or a grant? Well, that explains why there have been very few loans. Because any 8-year-old kid knows that if you can ask for a grant, a gift from your parent, instead of a loan, that's a way better deal. And so that's what people have asked for, and there's been no mechanism in the bill for anybody to say, you know, this is a decent project, but it should be a loan. And in sitting in meetings of the various review committees, we've heard review committee people voice these concerns, but not feel they had the authority to make that change because it's simply not been in the law. So there have been 4 or 5 loans. And what happens now is when people repay their loans, it goes into the
the pile of money to be granted out. So this last cycle, they actually were granting out a couple million dollars extra. It was money that had been, where a grant had been made for more money than the project actually needed, so all the money wasn't spent, or loan payments were returned. And so we think that to exclude loans from the program is the wrong way to go, and instead there should be criteria that actually says the staff should recommend if this project should be for a loan or a grant. We particularly saw this problem with grants to private businesses. But even some of the public ones, it's obvious that they will, they'll even say, like, there was one project, I don't remember the amount, it was around $600,000 that we were giving to a project. And it said that it would save the users of the facility $400,000 a year. Well, if it's saving the users of the facility $400,000 a year, they could make payments with that money on a loan. And it didn't make sense to say, okay, well, here's your $600,000. They had applied for a grant. It met all the criteria, and so they got a grant. And so that is a concern we have with the bill that you have before you. If there were some criteria that pushed one way or the other, and probably the staff is the place where the decision-making should be done, then it would make better sense as a program. The three examples in our testimony are for projects that were funded in the last bit of the last round, so they weren't high-priority projects. They were lower-priority projects, but they all got funded. One is for a private port. They'd already received $6.7 million of public grants, and they wanted to expand. And so we gave them some more money, and now we will have given them $9 million. I think if you think of the way you struggle to find $2 million here and $5 million there for education programs and human service programs, you have to wonder why we are giving $9 million to the owners of a private port. And they clearly have plenty of business operating at their facility, so they could be repaying loans. But I'd ask for a grant, too, if that was my option. Another example is the business next to them that actually does a lot of loading and unloading of products going onto ships and barges. And they asked for money this time around for rolling stock. Now, my testimony talks about not being comfortable with the definition of vehicle that's in the bill, which I guess the new amendment would take out. But people on the committees have said, you know, we fund this piece of equipment. There's nothing to keep this piece of equipment in the state of Oregon. It can get on a barge and it can go to San Francisco to another one of their facilities very easily. It's not the kind of capital improvements that that are certain to stay put in Oregon. And in my testimony, you'll see the kind of the quote from the Northwest Act as they were discussing it. The third example is the Sisters Airport. And really the problem with the Sisters Airport is this airport is 22 miles from two other airports. And with the status of our state, can we really afford an airport every 22 miles? It doesn't seem like it. The owner of that airport spent $900,000 purchasing it, and we've now given them $1.3 million to improve it. The most recent improvements were paving the area that the planes park on and putting in lighting so that people could come home to the airport after dark. Well, they could come home to an airport 22 miles away and drive home. And the public, and if they want this kind of amenity close to home, it seems like we have to ask ourselves, is this really our responsibility or is it their responsibility? So in conclusion, we're concerned about the vehicle definition, and we think that actually legislation that pushes that a percentage of the money be used as loans is the way that we should be moving to strengthen Connect Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Manton was moved by the spirit of testimony and will come forward, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Manton with the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. I grew up in Georgia, where you would come down to the First Baptist Church in Cumming, Georgia, and you would certainly be moved by the Spirit and get a lot of appreciation for doing so. Thank you for a little reminder of home. So I just wanted to mention the Dash 6 amendments that we're just reading through right now. I think that they, okay, and I just wanted maybe some clarification that the language there would still protect eligibility for bike ped projects and, for example, trails and whatnot. And I think we're okay with the notion that, you know, the bike sharing program, I think there was one funded program that was more for purchasing the bicycles. And I think if the intent of that amendment is to get around that, we're okay. We understand the larger picture here. But we would just be concerned about the language if it's going to say that trails are not to be eligible for Connect Oregon funds. And I don't think that's what this does, but so maybe we just want to get that on the record that we're
Senator Hatchell.
Oh, Madam Co-Chair, I was a member of the committee, and there was never any discussion to eliminate, as I think the testimony of Representative Davis, it was not the intent to eliminate anything per se.
Okay.
So what was there before still has the ability to compete.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Manton? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Last call. Anybody else want to testify on House Bill 2274A, Connect? Okay, there being none, I will close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2274A. Ms. Naburka.
Thank you, Senator Johnson, committee members. House Bill 2274 changes the name of the Multimodal Transportation Fund to the Connect Oregon Fund, and it makes various other changes to the Connect Oregon Fund, the Connect Oregon program that Representative Davis described very fully. He got all of them. The measure, the original staff measure summary, preliminary staff measure summary from this subcommittee, the fiscal impact statement, and the measure history are all available on OLIS. The Dash 6 amendment clarifies that transportation projects, as defined in the bill, do not include purchases or operating expenses of bicycles.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions for Ms. Naburka? Mr. Co-Chair.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move the Dash A6 amendment to House Bill 2274.
And before we act on that, Ms. Naburka, did you describe that? No, I'm getting my bills confused. Sorry. I was thinking about the Transportation Commission. I apologize. Co-Chair Gomberg has moved the A6 amendment. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? The A6s are adopted. Mr. Co-Chair?
I would then move House Bill 2274 as amended to the full committee with a do pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Any, whoops.
Co-Chair Gomberg. Got to be quick here. Madam Co-Chair, it didn't come up in the discussion today, but my memory during our work group was that Connect Oregon makes a practice of double checking the people they give money to make sure they don't actually owe money to the state. And we had suggested to them that they might want to actually enhance the process by which they review those qualifications, and I just wanted to get that on the record.
I think you have not only gotten it on the record, but I see young Mr. Cummings in the back, who administers the program on behalf of the Department of Transportation, nodding in the affirmative.
Indeed.
That will become part of the record. Thank you. Any other discussion? Any objections? So ordered, and we will need carriers on the Senate side into full. I'm going to ask Senator Hansel, who was part of the group.
And would Representative McKeown be able to carry this one?
She's not on full, and I think that's a...
This is more of a... This, yeah. Then I'll be happy to take
okay.
care of it.
Good. So with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2274A, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2075A relating to aircraft fuel. Ms. Naburka.
Thank you, Senator Johnson, committee members. House Bill 2075 increases aircraft fuel taxes by 2 cents a gallon for aviation gasoline, jet fuel, and motor fuel used for aviation starting on January 1st, 2016. It allows the Department of Aviation to keep 5% of the revenue for administration, and it establishes different dedications and allowable uses for the remainder of the new revenue. The measure establishes a process, mechanism, and criteria for distributing the new revenue and sets reporting requirements for the Department of Aviation, and the increase sunsets on January 1st, 2022. We heard this, had a public hearing on this bill a week ago, and there are two sets of amendments.
Thank you, Ms. Naburka. If you would describe the amendments, that would be helpful.
Thanks. The Dash A6 amendments remove a requirement that the Oregon Transportation Commission establish a review committee to review the revenue distributions set forth in the bill, and instead require that the State Aviation Board establish a review committee to review the revenue distributions.
And colleagues, I might just add a little context. The Department of Aviation is a freestanding state agency and is not overseen by the Oregon Transportation Commission. So to make that shift from the Transportation Commission to the agency made common sense and aligned the structures.
Thanks. The Dash A7 amendment adds $5.23 million in other funds expenditure limitation to the Department of Aviation for administration and the grant-making purposes outlined in the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions of Ms. Naburka? There being none, Mr. Co-Chair.
I would then move the Dash A6 amendments to House Bill 2075.
Colleagues, Representative Gomberg has moved the Dash A6 amendments to House Bill 2075. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
And Co-Chair, that went so well, I'd like to move the Dash A7 amendments to House Bill 2075.
Co-Chair Gomberg has moved the Dash A7 amendments to House Bill 2075. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Representative Gomberg.
How about I move House Bill 2075 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended?
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Whitson.
We had received...
I mean, Whit.
Thank you. We had received considerable testimony that something greater than 2 cents was desired by many. In fact, several had testified in favor of 4 cents. We don't have an amendment to that effect.
That would be correct. I think while there was enthusiasm in some quarters to take it to four, in fact, in some quarters to take it to 40... as we get to the closing moments of the legislative session, 2 ended up being the number.
I just state for the record, Madam Chair, that I am very disappointed in one commercial air carrier in this state that seemed to pare that number back to 2 cents.
Thank you. And a question over here, Senator Monroe.
Ditto.
Okay. Thank you. Co-Chair Gomberg.
I think I've already made the motion.
Oh, I'm sorry. Co-Chair Gomberg has moved House Bill 2075 to the full committee with a due pass, as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. We've had the discussion. Any objection? They're seeing none. So ordered, and we will need carriers.
I'll take it to House and full.
Okay, and I'll take it to the Senate. Okay. Thank you. With that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2075A and ask Ms. Naburka, do we have any other business before the committee today?
Not today.
Thank you very much. Colleagues and audience, I think some of these other bills that were set over may, after discussion with leadership and the big co-chairs, make a return appearance, some maybe not so much, and so stay tuned to a computer near you for the latest on the committee. Co-Chair Devlin has put committees on notice that they will be winding down probably this week, but I think we are anticipating meeting at least one more time. Okay. With that, colleagues, we're adjourned. With that, colleagues.